Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we had a double cheeseburger collapse at the Honda Classic, and it was a rain-soaked finish indeed. We get to all the golf drama, including Phil Mickelson getting the full cancel treatment. Welcome to 2022. Plus, we're tuned into Songs of Our Past and a classic cartoon. And this week's guest is inventor and D3 Golf app creator Tom Naramore on the creation of an app that's going to definitely change the way we think of wagering on the golf course. Plus some sushi talk and donuts when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Club Dr. Golf, the number one golf club care solution. You hear us talk about their two great products all the time. I will tell you right now that the spray and the polish are go-tos. They're in my golf bag and they're in my repertoire. It's so easy to just spray and clean those clubs as you work your way through the bag and get ready to head out onto the course. So bring your clubs back to life, restore their original shine, and keep them looking fresh with Club Doctor, either the solution or the polish, two quick, portable solutions that you need on the course for your clubs. Club Doctor Golf, Amazon's golf choice for golf club polish, also our choice as well too. So go to clubdoctorgolf.com and use our code COL. That's code COL for 15% off any purchase at clubdoctorgolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Snacks, Club Dr. Golf, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, let's just get this out of the way. We're going to pile on a little bit of hatred this week on a little bit of everybody.
It's if you're looking for a ray of sunshine, you're in the wrong place for the moment.
This is not it this week. I'm sorry to say. So let's get it out of the way here. I was sitting pretty Saturday night. I thought, oh man, after Alex goes wider wire with Neiman, I'm gonna follow suit here. I'm gonna have Daniel Berger go ahead and do it for me at PGA National for the Honda Classic. Instead, Berger slept on the lead going into Sunday and decided that he didn't want to win. And decided to back away pretty quickly in the front nine on Sunday.
Yeah, it was a pretty big collapse. I was trying to put that into words in the intro. All I could come up with was double cheeseburger. I was working on some puns over the last 24 hours, but nothing really stuck. But the bottom line is, yeah, the burger fell on the floor. Let's just say that. I mean, he was very bewildered early on Sunday, and you could tell. And the 7 at the par 5 was the one that really stuck out to me on the front nine. I saw that live, and as soon as I saw that, I texted you. I was like, well, you might want to tune in now, because this is far from a sure thing now.
Yeah, he just couldn't get anything going after that. And so instead we got Sepp Straka. Went in the pouring rain. The pouring rain is how it ended. And the skies opened and cried because Berger couldn't get it done for me. And instead we got this new guy.
Yeah, a guy that I bet on a few times. You may have seen him on my Twitter cards. I'm at Course of Life 1 weekly when I make these PGA picks and you're at MWRINC. You know, he's always just gone off at crazy odds. Fairly newcomer to the PGA Tour. Went to Georgia, University of Georgia. He is a Bulldog, even though he's from Austria. So he's got a lot of connections to Keith Mitchell and other Bulldogs on tour. A guy that was actually hinting at an Olympic medal last year, if you remember. He contended briefly representing Austria in the 2020 Tokyo competition. So, you know, his name's been popping around, but not typically at events with panache like this. And it was impressive to see his resilience. And you said it, the skies opened up at like the most inopportune time. All the leaders were literally on the 17th hole. And all of a sudden, you know how this is, Mike. We've spent some time in Florida on golf courses when these afternoon spot showers just like throw themselves up on the radar out of nowhere. And then the skies just open up. That's exactly what happened in the most crucial moment of this tournament.
Yeah, it's maybe a little early in the year for that sort of thing to be happening out in the courses in South Florida, but it definitely did. And still, you know, he motored through. He motored through.
And, it was gutsy, man. I mean, Berger hit his 3-wood in the water trying to go for it in the last. He was down 2. Kurt Kitayama had an impressive performance, lagged his eagle putt close to finish at 9. But Straka, just an unbelievable second shot on 18. easy two-putt birdie to secure the win by one and get that debut win in the pouring rain. He doesn't care what the weather was. All he sees is what's coming to him. Exemptions, checks, sponsors galore. So shout out to the Austrian for getting the debut win.
So Sepp Straka gets to reel in all the benefits of winning and all that extra sponsorships. Meanwhile, Phil Mickelson gets to see what it's like to not have a lot of sponsors stand by him as cancel culture for different reasons here because of his hatred for the PGA Tour and Jay Monahan, it seems, has reared its ugly head. And Phil Mickelson is now going to be sitting on the sidelines. He released a statement after we piled on last week on him, pretty much also saying that he was going to be stepping away from the game for a while. So wow. The question here is, will Phil Mickelson play on the PGA Tour again, or is he done?
Listen, I've heard crazier questions. Like, yes, I know he's got the will to keep playing the game, but he's in a very, very weird spot right now, mm-hmm. just in terms of his entire image. We don't really even need to have the debate as to whether the cancel was warranted or not. I'm just more surprised that it happened like this. This windfall of all the sponsors dropping him left and right, from the American Express, the tournament in which he's the host, the former Bob Hope, to KPMG. Mike, you've seen that KPMG logo on his hat forever. I mean,
I don't know what KMPG does. I just know they pay Phil Mickelson a boatload of money. Well, they used to anyway. They don't anymore. And did this all stem really out of his statement and him saying that he wasn't the person he's supposed to be? Do you think that's where that was the line that really made all these sponsors decide to jump ship on him?
I guess so. They really didn't like the wording of that statement, where he was still kind of very refusive and defensive with the accusations thrown out on him of what he was saying regarding his allegiance to the Saudi League versus the PGA Tour. And I don't know. It's just, is this a collection of things that are all kind of melting up? I was thinking, you know, over the past week in anticipation of us talking about this, like, you know, what is it with Phil? It's amazing. This guy was, you know, for a long time, so much the most liked man on the PGA Tour. And then through the years, we've learned more about him and some questionable scandals and insider trading this and skirting the law with this and that. And there's always been things that have come to question about Phil's image and what's really going on behind the scenes. And it makes me wonder if more of that hasn't slipped out to the wrong people, because he is just... He can do no right in anyone's eyes right now. It's tough times for the Mickelson camp.
Yeah, it's kind of a surprising collapse. And I think what's even more surprising when we think about this is that we've now witnessed in our lifetime, Alex, two of the game's best players have what they've done off the course destroy their career on the course. We saw Tiger come back from it, but it feels too late in his career to come back from this.
This is like, it's like the old saying, never meet your heroes. You know what I mean?
They might
just disappoint you. It's like when you pull back the curtain, it's like, oh, Mike, this is Tiger and Phil we're talking about right now. Can you believe this is where we're sitting with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson in 2022? Oh, God.
It's unbelievable.
It definitely is. I'm definitely hemming and hawing about the state of things. But nonetheless, Mickelson's remarks have gotten him in lots of trouble, and the Saudi League drama. While the empire of the league seems to be crumbling, there's still a lot of drama, that's for sure, when it comes to Greg Norman versus the PGA Tour. I don't know what you've seen of that, but it's getting pretty testy on Twitter right now.
Yeah, you know, if you remember last week, we also said that we thought Phil was coming off hot and being all about the money, and Greg Norman seemed to be, you know, we maybe were a little bit more on Greg Norman's side if we had to be on one way or the other, because we just kind of understood where he was coming from. But after Greg Norman's really electric statement that he put out as well, the letter that he sent to Jay Monahan, I'm not on Greg Norman's side anymore. No way. After his, just the way he worded everything, and like, wow.
It was just very accusational and just very kind of misguided. Like, I'll say this again and I'll harp on it. Unfortunately, I think we're too far gone from the statement, but I'll always remember that I will sit on this statement, Mike. I love that Greg Norman wanted to create a true world tour. That in the beginning, that was part of the real mission here. That has all gotten lost in the shuffle in the last year or two. And now Greg Norman is speaking out of desperation. This is a guy that's lost all the biggest stars, potentially moving away from the PGA Tour. It sounds like he wants to freaking take Commissioner Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour, to court. Like, he's saying it's illegal and immoral for you guys to ban them from making their own decision about where they want to play. So I don't know if this is a whole workers' rights lawsuit we're about to go into, but nonetheless, a legal kerfuffle is about to ensue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's really going to do anything, because I don't think there's a whole lot of steam behind this new league anyway at this point. And even if there is, the marquee players that we really care about are not going to touch this with Pokrak, a 10-foot pole
Mike,
anymore.
Jason Pokrak is not going to move the meter.
That's
for
you. That's true. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I appreciate how honest he's been, but...
Yeah,
no,
that's about it right now. So tough times for that Saudi league drama. Again, I'm still kind of waiting to hear from the European cohort of players who had said they were interested at one point, but things not looking good for the future of Greg Norman's Super League.
It's not. And you know, all of this, maybe one thing we're forgetting in all this, that this is also really going to cost Phil Mickelson, is he'll probably now never captain a Ryder Cup team.
I hadn't thought that far ahead. Actually. Mm-hmm,
that's right. So instead, for 2023, we get Zach Johnson. You remember Zach Johnson? He's two-time major champion. He's got a green jacket. He's won the British Open. And yeah. Now he gets to captain the Ryder Cup in 2023. What do you think of that?
Yes, Zach Johnson. All right, this is what I'll say about Zach Johnson. I'll lead with a compliment, okay? Zach Johnson has the coolest resume in golf for like a guy that's like not super accomplished. He's won two majors, and they're at Augusta and St. Andrews. It doesn't get any cooler than that if you had to pick two majors. So shout out to Zach Johnson for that. Accomplished player in his own right. Fiery, exuberant Ryder Cup captain that's going to get me pumped for Team USA in 2 years on the road in Italy. I don't know if he's quite giving off those vibes. I think he's maybe going for a retread of the stoic Steve Stricker vibes and the easy, friendly guy from the Midwest. I think he's going to try and play to that theme, Mike. But I don't know. This announcement just didn't really get my engine going when it came to the Ryder Cup.
All right, hot take. 2 years away, we were completely and utterly wrong when we were all on Team Europe just this last year for the Ryder Cup. Zach Johnson's U.S. team, is it going to repeat?
I mean, I'd love to just stick no and just still be a curmudgeon. You know? I'll just still be Scrooge here. I mean, again, the only other thing I'll harp on for the next year or so is that the U.S. hasn't won a road Ryder Cup in like two decades, I think. So it's been a long time, needless to say. but yeah, interesting announcement. Zach Johnson, definitely an accomplished player in his own right, does deserve the spot. It makes you wonder, though, you're right, back to what you said at the top, is Phil Mickelson's future as a Ryder Cup captain. What does that look like, especially with what he's now done and dented to this relationship with the PGA and the PGA Tour? Definitely something to watch down the line.
We'll see how it continues to play out. But in the meantime, this weekend, I think we're going to be watching some late night golf from Singapore, because the LPGA returns after a 3-week hiatus for Asia's major. That's the HSBC Women's World Championship. At Sentosa Golf Club in Singapore.
Very cool. And you know me, I love me some late night golf. So that's what we're going to get when we're on the Asian time zones. So looking forward to seeing the ladies back in action. Pretty stacked field. Everyone's making the trip over there. The funny thing I've been seeing on Instagram this week of all the players making the trip over there, boy, traveling with a week's worth of clothes and the golf bag right now in like the times that we're living in from the United States to Singapore, not very easy logistically. We got a lot of bags being left behind, players searching for their suitcases that still haven't got to their hotel. So cheers to all the stuff successfully making it to the LPGA stop in Singapore.
Stateside, the guys are going to be playing in one of two events. Let's start with the marquee event, and that's the one in Puerto Rico, because that's where everyone's going to be.
I like that. Well done, sir. Yeah, I like giving highlights to the Puerto Rico Open. I don't know how much you saw of Ryan French and Mark Baldwin's journey on Monday. Unfortunately, they did not Monday qualify for the Puerto Rico Open. They were trying to give it a go. 5-under, got it done and got into the field. But this is a good opportunity for a lot of those second tier PGA Tour players. You know, a perfect example, a guy who's got off to a decent start is Dylan Wu. He didn't quite make the Bay Hill field because of where his number is right now, but he's going to be in the field of Puerto Rico. So this gives an opportunity like them, those guys, the second full field event, you know, running cohesively with Bay Hill. And I always like the opportunities that Puerto Rico presents, and there's been some cool champions in recent years. So I'll be tuned in there for sure.
That's right. Brandon Grace won it last year at 19 under par, beating out Johnny Vegas. We know a lot of these names. We've been talking about them a lot. Let's talk about the names that people may not have heard of. Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Hideki Matsuyama, Jason Kokrak. I don't know how much longer he's going to be on the PGA Tour. He's not that great. These guys and others will be playing at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I think this one has some potential fireworks.
It does. And little breaking news right before we hopped on, Bryson officially a no-go this week in Bay Hill. He was talking about coming back off of that mysterious wrist injury in Saudi Arabia and playing this week, but he is not going to. He's going to give it another week and see if he can go next week at Sawgrass for the Players' Championship. So you're not going to see him in the field. He can't recreate that amazing moment last year, Mike. Remember when he drove it over the water with like a 350-yard carry on that par five or something like that? Mm-hmm. And he did the full send sign. Boy, that was a year ago. That's when we really, really liked Bryson for a very temporary period of time.
I never liked Bryson. I never liked him.
That was his coolest moment. That was his coolest moment. Let me rephrase
I will say I didn't like Bryson when at the Ryder Cup, he was like changed clubs on whatever hole it was. And the crowd got really upset with him. And he was like, guys, it's OK. I'm still going for the green. That was a pretty cool Bryson DeChambeau moment. That one really, I will admit that. That was a really cool moment.
So he's had a couple of those. He's not going to be able to recreate that at Bay Hill. But yeah, you mentioned it. Good players in the field. Rory, a couple of sneaky good finishes these past few weeks, even though you haven't really seen him much in contention. He played decently at Riviera. I like Hideki on my card this week. Yeah, you know, he's a guy that's won recently that's still in great form. He does very well on courses like this. This is a plodder, difficult course. It's not going to take a million birdies to win at Bay Hill. Somewhere between 5 and 10 under could get it done for the entire week. Not too far from what we saw at the Honda. So he's probably going to be on my card. I'm at Course of Life 1 on Twitter, and you're at MWRNC. See if we can keep this momentum going. At least maybe one of us can get a 54-hole leader going into Sunday, right?
Yeah, we'll see if we can do it 3 straight weeks here. I don't know.
That's the goal.
I don't know. See what we can do. Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I had a little childhood throwback this week, where I was, you know, I'm trying to get out of the routine of being on my phone every night when I get into bed. You know, you get into bed, you stay on your phone, play a couple games.
That's a tricky routine to break. So trying to break it.
Yeah, it's difficult to like start for me to like pick up a book and read a book. I have 3 books on my nightstand, and I have 2 of them I'm halfway through, and the other one I just haven't started yet. It's challenging.
Yeah, we got to get the book club started again. I feel like we're waiting on that shipment of biography in May, right? That's our next week.
But what I'll do sometimes is I'll go back to something that's familiar and comforting and is a childhood throwback. And in that case, I decided to go back to read Calvin and Hobbes, one of the best cartoons, you know, newspaper cartoons, I think, of all time. And I think what's really annoying to me is that a lot of people think that Calvin and Hobbes, you think of those bumper stickers, you think of like Calvin being a really bad kid where he's peeing on stuff and stuff like that. He never does that in the comic. Never does that in the comic. So,
wow, real smear campaign on his image, huh?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I mean, it's Calvin is just an innocent kid who gets into trouble every once in a while, but he's naive and he's imaginative, and it's just always fantastic to escape into that world of him and his tiger Hobbes. And Bill Watterson's illustrations throughout are just fantastic as well. He did some really different things for a newspaper cartoonist, and really pushed the boundary of what you could do with a cartoon. And, you know, when in doubt, Calvin and Hobbes is always fall back to that.
Love that. That's a great childhood memory indeed. I'll stay right on that theme with what I was tuned into this past week. Mike, I was browsing through the Vice YouTube channel. I don't know if you've ever watched YouTube videos from them. They do a lot of really cool video series, but one that they put up recently is called The Story Of. And essentially, these are all background documentary style videos on the story of great hits of our past and how they got created. So, for instance, they did a 20-minute deep dive into the Baha Men classic, Who Let the Dogs Out? Who?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. How about that for a song you haven't heard in a while?
Oh, geez. I tried to sing that the other day because for some reason it just came up and my wife threatened divorce, so I had to stop.
It's so very fascinating to hear the background on the song. They had to re-record it over several times. They picked the singers for it literally days before it got recorded. They had to do the barking for like over an hour straight of just barking takes until they got the right bark. It was very cool to see how these songs came together. Some other classics you'll remember are Shaggy, It Wasn't Me. We did a whole documentary on how that song came together. And yes, there was some infidelity involved, unfortunately. Remember the Blue Dabba Dee song by Eiffel 65, a legendary Italian group. So there's all these gems of our past that you kind of forgotten and have blocked out of your brain. It was cool to revisit them and see how they all came together. So if you want to check that out, check out The Story Of on the Vice YouTube channel. Highly recommend.
All right, let's get into this week's guest. Alex, we've been having some fun recently with a brand new app on our smartphones called the D3 Golf app. And you got a chance to talk to the guy who made it possible.
That's right. Yeah. CEO Tom Naremore. And this is really cool. When I found this originally, shout out to friend of the show, Hannah Gregg, who was doing a cool challenge and inviting all sorts of people to play against her. And I couldn't understand what was going on at first, because surely Hannah Gregg is not inviting hundreds and hundreds of trolls from the internet to actually join her on the golf course. That can't be, right? That seems too good to be true. But I learned a whole lot more about what was actually happening with this challenge thanks to this very cool app, which is definitely a head turner. If you're out there and you're a golfer and you like to wager, this is the conversation for you.
We'll get into this conversation with Tom in just a moment. But first, we want to tell you about one of our new favorite golf balls out on the course. It's what we're playing with a lot, and it's bright yellow.
Yeah, and easy to find. Can't mistake whose it is. And goes very well in the wintertime, too. You know, there's a lot of weird obstructions on the course these days when you're playing winter golf. It's nice to have a bright yellow ball that you can spot from anywhere in the fairway.
Especially, you know, the grass gets a little dry, a little burnt out. It's kind of hard to see with a white ball sometimes. And so you get the bright yellow Volvic ball out there on the course, and it'll go straight. It'll go far. It has a little soft feel too, depending on the ball you get. They got a couple different ones out there for you. They got the Vivid, which is the number one matte finish ball in golf. They also have the XT Soft, which as well. It is. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot. I played with it the other day. I only lost three of them. It was fantastic.
I mean, that's another goal out there. If you're just trying to lose minimal golf balls, that's a goal for everyone out there. Volvics, they stay in play. I like the soft feel. So that's really all the endorsement you need to know. But it goes beyond the balls too. They have really cool merch, really cool Marvel comic themed gifts for all the golfers or Marvel fans in your life. So lots to check out with our friends at Volvic.
That's right. And they're not spending big money on marketing to top tour players like Jason Kokrak. They're instead giving it to guys like us who, we take literally pennies on the dollar on what you would pay a Jason Kokrak. And then we come around and we tell you about it. And we tell you about it because we play with it too and we like it. So we're not going to tell you to go play something that's not any good. So that's the Volvic golf ball performance in color. Check them out at volvic.com. They've got a ball for every swing. That's volvic.com.
Next up on the tee, we have the founder, creator of a real cool golf app concept, something very unique that brings the wagering on the golf course to life. He's got lots of experience that he's taking to this app as well, too. It's great to have Tom Naremore with D3 Golf joining us here on the Course of Life. Tom, how's everything going? How are you?
Oh, absolutely fantastic. You know, living out here in Northern California, I guess we always complain about the weather. It's either too dry or too cold or whatever. But I'll tell you what, golf right now in Northern California couldn't be better. We're in the 60s to high 60s every day. Sunshine. It's just been awesome.
Yeah, people are begging for the spring days to come in a lot of parts of the country. But fortunately, you and I, where I am in Texas, we're okay. We can pretty much get a game in 12 months of the year. But I want to flash back to your maybe earliest memories of the game. Are you always tied to Northern California, or what's your kind of background in the game, and what do you remember about the game growing up?
Yeah, I have to say that I am Northern Cal raised. Moved to Northern California when I was 2.
Oh, wow.
Born outside of Boston, moved to upstate New York just for a few months, and then out to California we went, and been here ever since. Went to college out here, Chico State grad, woohoo, Wildcats. I call myself a Northern California for sure. So listen, early stage golf, growing up as a lot of boys did, just into all kinds of sports, and came home from 5th grade, summertime, looking forward to just, relaxing and goofing off as almost a 6th grader. And my mom had stood up first morning of summer vacation, set little tiny, I think I probably had 4 clubs in it, little starter golf set. I'm like, what the heck is this? She goes, oh, get on your bike, put those on your shoulder and ride down to, the local golf course. I signed you up for an all summer long youth league. Never had played golf in my life. Didn't know anything about it, and literally just got hooked. We had so much fun all summer long. I thought I was going to hate it, but just had a ball that whole summer, goofing off, trying to figure out how to hit that little white ball. But
that's great. So you know, mom really threw you to the wolves there, and it worked out.
She did. Yeah. Knowing me, and the kind of mischief I got into, she didn't want me at the house. She let the golf course take care of me instead of me bugging her all day. So
nice, love that.
Love it. I wouldn't have changed it for the world. But that's what exposed me to the game, got me going.
Very cool. And then from there, obviously, you went through school. And it's interesting because I looked at a kind of a lot of your early adult career. And I know you've had a range of different jobs in IT, cybersecurity, information systems, and whatnot. Now, when I think about those industries, and I have a little bit of professional background in them myself, you typically think that there's maybe a little bit of golf mixed in with business. Was it like that for you in your earlier parts of your career? How was golf for you in the adult life? Was it more so done with business, or what, were you a weekend golfer?
Yeah. Great conversation there. Great question. My first part of my career, no, had nothing to do with golf. Didn't touch a club really through college. I played rugby in college and didn't really touch a club. And then my first couple of jobs didn't really at all. Serendipitously, in the year 1998, I got a job with a dot-com startup here in Sacramento, and Blackberries came out that year.
Oh, yes. Who doesn't remember? We just bid them adieu recently, actually.
Right. And one of the guys, I was the director of sales for the company, and one of my lead sales guys was just an addicted golfer, and we got issued these Blackberries, and we figured out that we could have sales meetings, and we didn't have to be in the office, but we could look like we were in the office. And so we were playing hooky, getting our job done. But I mean, the Blackberry just opened up this remote type work technology, and we used it to the fullest. So I jumped back into golf there. We got acquired by Earthlink for $308 million, which was my first exit in the dot-com space. And I became the manager of acquisitions for Earthlink, did that for 4 years. And literally when I rode planes, people asked me what I did for a living. And I know there's no video here, but I'm 5'6", 145 pounds soaking wet. And so when people on airplanes asked me what I did, and I rode airplanes, every week, I told him I was a professional golfer. and they would laugh just like that, Alex. And because those two don't compute, they'd look at me like, all right, this guy's BSing me, you know, what's going on? And I'd laugh and I'd say, no. I make my money playing golf on the golf, right? I do all my business on the golf course, which was totally true. I got paid to wine and dine these prospective people that I was going out to buy their companies, and most of them played golf. So I got to play golf a lot those 4 years. And literally ever since then, I've been trying to figure out how to get my career back into golf because I loved it so much. Hmm. And when this idea came to us in the summer of 2018, the light bulb went off and I went, oh my gosh, this might be the vehicle to be able to play golf for a living. And lo and behold, it's turned out to be that and much, much more.
Nice. Tell everyone a little bit about the one carrot you dangled is that this all originated from a Pebble Beach outing. We obviously just recently watched the PGA Tour play there and at Monterey and Spyglass. And those are just some absolutely amazing bucket list courses. How long has that Pebble Beach outing been going for you and your guys' golf trip? And what do you love most about heading out there?
Oh my gosh. Well, so we just completed our 15th annual 2 weeks ago. There's 60 guys that go. It's not all the same 60.
This is a real outing. Okay.
Oh wow. Yeah. It's huge. It's put on by a big financial institution that my co-founder is part of. He uses this tournament for not only fun, but as a big thank you to some of his high producers and whatnot. And literally, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I kind of wear it as a badge now. I'm his neighbor. We're best of friends, have been for over 20 years. And these people sign up and it's fully paid for through the sponsors. And then people don't show up. I go down there as a fill-in. I get to do this for free. We play Pebble, Spy, Spanish Bay, Poppy Hills, Bayonet. You know, it rotates depending on, you know, where we are. But it was really the genesis of D3 between the co-founder and I, because he would invite me down there and there's a little tie in there. I don't know if you wanted me to go into it now, but yeah, it's where the whole thing launched.
Yeah, I know. So essentially, from what I understand, you did a lot of bet collecting there, maybe for everything that went on throughout the year, whatnot. But the annual outing brings a lot of people together and it presents the opportunity for a lot of golfers to wager amongst themselves in many different facets on the course. It's interesting the way it's always worked because sometimes we've got cash on us and sometimes we don't. And I got you. I owe you this and I owe you that. There were a lot of really weird kind of futile ways that money collection was going on previously. So I'll lay the floor for you there and kind of tell me how the actual genesis for the app creation came about to change the way we bet on the golf course.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, this was our 15th annual. So for the first 10 years that I went, I played golf with my co-founder, Craig, a couple times a week, literally. I had the ability to do that. I own a cybersecurity company outside of this. And have been doing consulting there. So long story short, we would do this Nassau bet, this front, back, and overall, and we nicknamed it dollar, 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 because we'd play a dollar on the front, a dollar on the back, and dollar overall. I kept a money clip in my bag, and whoever won that day, we would take, either I would put the money into the money clip or Craig would, and it would stay in my bag. The last night of the Pebble trip, I would haul that wad out from the full years of wagers. And we'd buy the nicest scotch that the wad would afford for the two of us the night before we play Pebble, which is always the last day of the trip.
Fair enough.
And so, right. And so we cheers each other and the thing would start all over again. So in 2018, Craig came into a restaurant and I came into a restaurant with our respective foursomes that we did not know each other was playing golf that day. But through some commonality, we were texting each other, figured it out, and wound up at the same restaurant. And he walked through the front door and he said, man, we should have been able to play our dollar, dollar, dollar game on two different courses. Well, me being a software guy, I snap answered him. I could build that. That'd be easy, right? I was kidding. He was kidding.
That was the guys that were, I could tell.
That was it, right? The guys that were sitting around us going, what did you just say? That, wait a minute, what is that? That sounds like a pretty good idea. And it's still, even at that, we didn't know really had something. So, you know, there's a little bit, the back half of the story is a bit long, but I wound up talking to a person that I got introduced to the very next day after that dinner. And I said to him, I said, hey, what do you think about a mobile app? Does all the hard math, computes the scores, has a digital wallet, and sends the money to the winner on a golf side bet. And he's all, dude, that's a great idea. Anyway, so boom, off we went. Did some friends and family funding and have never looked back. We've raised over $1 million since 2018, been in stealth mode, haven't really told anybody. We finished Gen 2 in September. That's been out in the wild in both Android and Apple. We are the only fully legal and compliant golf side wagering app that has its own digital wallet. It's free to load the money. It's your money. You can take the money out whenever you want and bet your friends, and it does all the hard math for you.
That was something I noticed off the bat. I was like, oh, geez, this is a huge relief, because you always wonder how you can actually get the money in and take it out. So let's address some of the concepts, maybe address the haters out there who are critical thinkers towards an app like this and wondering how this all works. Obviously, the first but that we want to address regarding D3, because I picked up this app and I saw it and I was like, yeah, but you know, you can't put money in these apps. It's just a digital scorecard. That's what a lot of people think of when they come across an app like this. Explain exactly how it works to put the money in and also get it out when the time comes.
Absolutely. So first and foremost, Apple and Google, before we could distribute this app, forced us to complete all of our compliance. So they treat us as an actual casino. So we actually have to have a back end that is fully secure, meets all of the federal banking standards for a casino, the whole shoot and match. And so this thing is fully legal. But the one thing to note is we don't control any of the data that goes into the app on the gaming and wagering side. That's done by a third party that's well known in the gaming and online betting industry. We utilize them. They've been around for a long, long time and handle lots and lots of folks, folks like DraftKings and FanDuel. And so we use that same third party. It's fully secure, fully legal, and that money is the players. We don't touch that money. It's not operational. It works just like online poker as well. That is a liability account that any player can take the money out at any time. We don't use that money for anything. That is the player's money 100% of the time.
That's awesome. Cool. And one other thing I wanted to address too, because you mentioned the idea of this, you know, playing at different courses. A lot of people are confused because they're thinking that this is really just meant for head-to-head matches with their friends who they're playing beside on any given day. One really cool thing that people have gotten to see through our promotion, myself and my co-host Michael, you know, we live over 1,000 miles away and we don't get to play golf together anymore, which is an absolute travesty. But this was able to help connect us in the form of a remote challenge. So explain, how does that work when we're doing a remote challenge on completely different courses?
It's a perfect question. So yeah, this is our big invention. Again, it came from the comment from Craig to me. You know, we should have been able to play our dollar game on two different courses. So during our research, we figured out that the USGA actually sanctions and has tournaments, right? USGA tournaments. I'm not talking about pros. I'm talking about amateurs.
Yep.
Amateur tournaments, and they calculate what's called a course handicap for all those players in a tournament, even if they're on different tee boxes. So I called the USGA and I said, look, I've got an app. I want to do the same thing. I want to use your algorithm, but I want to add something to it. And she said, what? I said, well, can you verify for me that your algorithm will work if I'm on course A and my buddy's on course B somewhere across the nation? We're on two different courses, but we use the slope ratings from those different tee boxes and use your sanctioned algorithm to calculate a course handicap. Would that work? Long pause from the USGA. And they said, absolutely, that'll work. That'll work perfectly. Great. Awesome. So we added some things to it that also level the playing field as well. It's not just the slope rating and whatnot, but we take into consideration, you know, that person's history on their index and that type of thing. So we really try to make, we really have done made the playing field level between two players.
Yeah.
But when I told the USGA what we were doing, they just about, they fell out of their chairs. They're like, oh my gosh, you know, that sounds amazing. You're going to connect, just like you said, Alex, you're going to connect friends and relatives and college friends and high school buddies and whatnot. They're going to be able to play against each other at any time they want. And we said, yeah. So this concept of removing time and location, similar to what the online poker apps did for in-person poker, we're bringing to the on-course golfer.
Very cool. And I love the way the two handicaps are laid out within the app. It's, I call that maybe like the anti-sandbagging clause or something like that. Right. So it's all in the up and up, and we know exactly where everyone stands. Again, it's the D3 Golf app, also $$$. Check them out in the app store. It's Tom Naramore joining us. I want to talk about the team you've assembled too. A friend of the show participated in a really cool celebrity challenge. How'd you guys originally get connected with our friend Hannah Gregg, who was the one who originally inspired me to check out the app in the first place?
No, I appreciate it. So we comb social media and comb different blogs and whatnot. And she came up in a search. Lo and behold, she grew up and went to high school very near where I live. She lives down in Scottsdale now. But Hannah went to a local high school, and interestingly enough, when she comes home and sees her folks, she plays at my semi-private golf course that I'm a member of the men's club there.
Nice.
And I just reached out to her and said, hey, check our website out. I'd love to talk to you about a concept we have. And she was willing and has been a great friend of our app ever since. We love her to death. She is amazing on social media, and you know, is coming up through the ranks on the mini tour for the ladies. So we've got great hopes for her career.
Definitely. And the other guy I got to shout out who's part of your team is the Tiger beater himself, Nick O'Hearn. A lot of golf fans know the lefty Aussie as the guy who was able to beat Tiger not once but twice in the match play. Talk to me about Nick's involvement and what his perspective has kind of lended to you guys as you're creating the app.
Yeah, thanks, Alec. There's two things I get out of it. I've actually got to play two physical golf rounds with Nick when he was living at Isleworth, which is where Tiger used to live nice. Way back in the day. But played with him a couple times. He's since moved to Australia. However, Nick dials into our exec call every Monday. He's a close friend now. But Nick's really played the role of quality control is one of the main roles that he has fulfilled. He's helped us with the golf side game rules, how they're played, and how the rules change from country to country too. So he's been a real help there. But just having him being able to dial the phone for us and get us in to talk to the television industry or the golf industry or the golf manufacturers or that type of thing, he's just been amazing to work with. Couldn't find a nicer guy in the world, but yeah, he is the Tiger killer. He's the only one that beat Tiger twice at the Accenture match play. Boy, is he fun to play golf with, or just to watch him. It's amazing how good at golf
he is. How's his game is he
even days? Be, he even being an ex pro. Right? Yeah. It's just amazing. The other thing that people probably don't know about him is he's just like Mickelson. He's right-handed, but he plays golf left. Pretty interesting. He jokes that golf was so easy right-handed, he wanted to give everybody else a chance, so he plays left-handed just to help everybody else out.
Oh, that's honorable of him. Tell him I said hi, and I bet the game is very strong from Nick. Let's get into a moment that I know you could probably recount because you've had a lot of moments on the golf course. I'm curious, when you talk about maybe like your favorite one bet moment on the golf course, maybe your favorite dollar moment, what comes to your mind in all your years in the game?
Well, it just happened at Pebble. Nice. You know, what we like to do is, hey, I'll bet you a dollar X. I'll bet you a dollar, you know, long drive or closest to the pin or whatnot. So at Poppy Hills, and this is completely self-serving. I'm going to preface that right now. But number nine at Poppy Hills, people know it. Big par five downhill shot. I didn't particularly hit my second shot very well, but I was set up at the front of the green on my third. So I was putting four for a par five. I was 15 feet off the green, but the pin was all the way in the back. And I was actually playing with an ex-tour pro at the time. He stepped it off, so I've got verification. It was 128 feet, and I was playing with my partner, Craig, at the time, and he bet me a buck, and I sunk that 128-foot putt. It was the longest putt I've ever sunk in my entire life. So,
wow. Did you get odds on that $1 bet, or was that just a two-putt bet, or what?
Kicking myself. I should have, right? That would have been the smart thing to do. Was to get, how long is this? I should have got a 20-1, but no.
Yeah, 128 feet. That makes Harold Varner's bomb in Saudi Arabia look like a tap-in. Jesus, some impressive stuff there, Tom. Nice work.
Crazy. Good, right, 25-foot break in the thing. And anyway, it was something else. It was a bunch. We were last group, so our entire group was up on the balcony at the clubhouse. They watched it go in, so I kind of felt it was a special moment for me.
Oh yeah, when you get the boys clapping from the clubhouse, nothing better. Exactly. I love it. Exactly. Speaking of, we love ending our conversations with our 19th hole question. So I guess the question really is: after that amazing putt you had, when you get into the 19th hole, what's like your go-to choice for your favorite meal and drink?
Oh man, so I love a good hamburger, dude. I'm a hamburger guy, or a hot pastrami. So a hot pastrami, and then I like a good IPA, cold IPA with that.
Nice. That might be the first pastrami answer in the history of that question, but I respect the sandwich choice indeed. Hey, Tom Naramore, again, with the D3 Golf app, dollar, dollar, dollar. Check them out in the App Store. Love having you be part of the Course of Life family, and looking for more from the app, and best of luck when you hit them out there, okay?
I appreciate it so much. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it so much.
That interview with Tom was brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. It's easily, Alex, one of my favorite accessories that I take out every time I play and strap onto that golf cart. Slide your phone right in there. You don't need to worry about it being anywhere other than right there all the time. You sit back down in the golf cart after you take your shot. Phone's right there. You just hit your home button. You see what alerts came in, which, depending on how popular you are, maybe none. And you go about your day. And it's in a great spot. So if you even need to record yourself to make some content to go on the Instagrams, you can do that too, because it's in a great spot right there. And you can save 10% off your purchase of a Phone Caddy when you use our promo code, which is Course of Life. You can get a Desert Fox Phone Caddy in a range of colors and even from the patriotic line. So you can show your support for your military veteran or police first responder in your life. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your phone caddy. And don't forget to use that promo code Course of Life to save 10%. Again, that's promo code Course of Life at desertfoxgolf.com. And we're back. Great chat there with Tom. I'm really kind of liking this D3 app, Alex, especially since I'm undefeated and you're not.
Oh, yeah. It's nice to win all the time, right? Yeah. Congrats on the W. I will hand it to you one more time. But I will be coming for blood on the rematch. I'm going far lower than I did a month or so when I played out at AB Ranch. I want redemption. So we're going to have to do a rematch pretty soon. You can follow at home, again, by downloading the D3 Golf app, dollar, dollar, dollar. Check it out in the App Store. And give us a challenge. You can find us on there and let's have a game. Let's do it.
And if you like that interview and you want to play with us and do other things like that, you're also going to need to hit that subscribe button on the podcast app that you're listening to us on. It's really easy. You just take your finger or your mouse and you click subscribe. It's really, I'll give you a second to do it right now. It's really easy. Did you do it? Do we think they did it, Alex? I don't know if they did it. Okay, good. All right, let's move on. Let's talk baseball. We haven't talked baseball in a while. Hey, Alex, did you want the baseball season to start on time?
I did, because I say this every year. The only time of the year when I actually enjoy baseball is when it's spring training and the lead up and the opening day and week of the season. My baseball fandom peaks right now with the anticipation to baseball season, because it means better things, warmer weather, a new year started. And alas, where do we sit now?
Well, you know, I actually had to double check myself the other day because I forgot that they were still in a lockout, because there's been literally like nothing coming out from here.
Forget about baseball, Mike. You forgot they were in a lockout.
Oh, well, you remember the baseball commissioner said that the whole reason to do this lockout was so that they could make sure the season started on time and they didn't have to cancel games. Well, guess what? We're canceling games, man.
Woohoo! Yeah. I mean, I'm okay bringing the 162 game season down, but I'm not okay with squeezing it into a shorter season.
Well,
it sounds like at this point, there's going to be at least, this is what I've read, at least 3 to 6 weeks of canceled games is what they're estimating right now. Baseball might not start until May or June, maybe.
I don't know what they're going to do here, because Major League Baseball said they want at least 4 weeks of spring training, and so I don't even think they have anything. Did they even agree on anything? Did they even agree on like what time to start their meetings? I don't even know right now.
They finally had some like longer hardcore meetings where they actually were coming to some agreements. Nowhere near an agreement that'll start baseball again. But they had a funny meeting last week that was literally 15 minutes long. It was 15 minutes. They all just gathered and they had a 15 minute meeting, decided they were done. That's where baseball negotiations are at, basically.
I think it takes them 15 minutes just to decide what color pen they're going to be using for the day.
Nonetheless, I sit and wait. I love the palm tree spring training shots roster, seeing paradise. You know, it's just a part of the year that I am missing right now, despite my lack of baseball fandom. That part I'm missing.
I love spring training just because I love knowing the baseball season is going to start. And then I like stop paying attention after that. So it's like, shouldn't I be paying attention now? Shouldn't the season supposed to be starting in a month?
They're never going to get us this problem, because they're going to rush spring training and it's not going to be at the right time. And they're just never going to get us. So it's like, maybe see you in August, September for us in baseball, basically.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, just let me know when the Boston Red Sox post a photo of them loading the truck up to go south. So then we'll see all that.
It's always a good sign.
It's always a sign. Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes. Brought to you by our friends at Tosi Bites, makers of Tosi Super Bites, the Pop Bites, you name it. They have a great healthy on-the-go snack for golfers and just anyone who wants to keep it healthy and keep it light. They have flavorful snacks and all different options. Tosi.com/COL, promo code COL20. We're getting gluttonous on Always End With Food. I'll go first. Something I hadn't had yet in 2022. I got out to a new sushi place, Mike. How's your relationship with sushi these days? And what do you typically like to order when you go there?
You know, my relationship with sushi over the last couple of years has actually evolved for me not wanting to get within a 10-foot pole of it to actually last week, I think it was, I was like, hey, we should go get sushi again. So I am actively asking for it, and I've been thinking about it recently because I haven't had it in a while, and I'm getting slightly more adventurous. I still will fall back to maybe the typical California roll or Philly roll.
That's fair.
But I'm willing to try some new stuff. New stuff.
We've got it down to a science at this point. I've been with my wife long enough that our order is just basically an equation at this point. We split three rolls. One of them is just your standard California tuna or salmon or something like that. And then the other two, we go bougie and we get the fancy ones. And then we got to go sides of either gyoza or the wontons, aka rangoons. And a mamesa sometimes. But that's usually the repertoire, usually split in the three rolls. So it was a great sushi order. And it was fun, by the way. I hadn't done this in my life. I hadn't been to a sushi place that had live music as well. Nice little acoustic guitar for the date night. So I enjoyed the vibes on Friday.
Very nice. Very nice. My biggest problem with sushi, though, I will say, is how expensive it gets, because it gets pricey pretty fast.
I was going to ask, what's your price limit on a roll? Mine's like, if a sushi roll is more than like, and I'm pretty bougie, but if a sushi roll is more than like $14, $15, I think I'm out at that point. I don't really need to pay more than that for one roll.
Yeah, I don't think I'm into sushi enough to be paying that much money right now. I mean, it's... It's got to be damn good sushi. Like
$7 a pop. It's easy.
Yeah, there you go. Well, while you were eating sushi, I was making donuts this weekend. So
I saw that. And now, hold on. There was a little bit of chirping going on because of the shape of your donuts. Want to clarify what was going on there on the internet?
So I made square donuts. And I made a recipe from the Washington Post, and it was a square donut. It was a vanilla brioche donut with a vanilla glaze. It's fantastic, spectacular, best donut I've ever made. I've only made like two other donuts before, but and part of the reason why I went square, I'm going to give away my whole business plan here. You ready for this? Okay.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, the wife and I and others have always joked that I should open a bakery or something. Or I should do something like that. And we're like, yeah, but you got to do something different. And, you know, you need something low overhead. So you got to do like a food truck. If you're going to do a food truck, you got to do something different. So what's different? Donuts. Donuts are different. And we're doing it here in Savannah. What is Savannah known for? Savannah's known for their squares. If you come to Savannah, it's all about the squares. So you got to do the donut in a square. So I made a square donut.
The plan is to open a
square donut food truck.
And that's an easy food to replicate. And here's the thing about the donut is that plays at 7 a.m. That plays in the afternoon. And that plays at 2 a.m. for the right crowd, too. Like you can sell those things all day at night.
You could even eventually expand it where you could do, you know, maybe at lunch or dinner, you make that, slice that donut in half and you put something on it.
Oh, yeah.
You maybe do a donut ice cream sandwich as well. There's a lot of different things you can do with a donut. And so, we'll see where this goes. I'm open to angel investors. Reach out to me. MWRINC, Instagram, Twitter. Come at me, yo.
And no Let's hate on the square donut. I love that. It actually took me back and it made me do a double take. I was like, oh, what's going on there? So the intrigue factor was definitely raised. Love that. That was hashtag always end with food and a wrap on another great course of life. Here comes a little 10-second content tease, Mike. How about this? Surprise, didn't tell you a thing, but here it comes. And guess who's coming to the Course of Life podcast soon? Of all people in the world, of all people. The Harlem Globetrotters, Mike. The Harlem Globetrotters are going to be on the Course of Life podcast. You hit that subscribe button right now. You hit it right now. You will not regret it. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We'll see you next week.